Speaking of rates, let's talk about that and other business things on the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams here. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. And Terry Savage joins us on Wednesdays. Hi again, Terry. I hope you're well.
Yes, it's kind of a calm day in the markets, calm day for IRS questions, and pretty calm out there as we head into the holiday weekend. Notably, interest rates. Two weeks ago, we were talking about inflation. Could it come roaring back and push interest rates higher? Actually, interest rates are a little bit lower, and three-month Treasury bills are just hovering above the zero level. Nobody's noticed it. And the stock market is hovering, well, about 500-600 points below its all-time highs.
We're on our way to 40,100, aren't we?
You know that I every year moderate that Executives Club Economic Forecast Forum, which Dr. Bob Frelick, who has been our guest a few times here, always makes a forecast. And this year he said Dow 40,100. You'll remember it because of 401k. And he just came back on in early April. He had predicted Dow would be over 33,000 by the time baseball opening day was, and he was just right at it. And so, yeah, it looks like he might be right on the money, and we're doing another Executives Club forecast. I'll post that information. It's in June, about 3 weeks from now. You can listen in, or we got to get him back on the air again in June and see how he feels about 40,100 by year end.
You know, there's these big picture things that we talk about, almost like bulls in a china shop. And I wonder if some of them are going to bump into each other and upset things in ways we don't fully understand, like the massive amount of student debt, the insane prices people are getting for their houses, the massive amount of money we've put into the economy with unemployment benefits, the surplus, and the stimulus. I just wonder all of these big numbers and things that are kind of not normal, if somehow or another they're going to make something happen with our lives, our jobs, the economy down the road that we can't anticipate. You know what I mean? We're going to look back someday and say, oh, well, of course that happened because X, Y, and Z all lined up in 2021. And that's not a question, really, is it, Terry?
But Sean, I think that's a really profound observation. I had a friend, one of the great market traders of all time, who used to say to me, about people as well as markets, frankly, he said, when you see extremes, don't just expect them to happen in one place. And you have pointed out some of the most unusual extremes, the tons of money being printed, of course, the after effects of the pandemic, the shortages and dislocations, the prices of stocks, some would say, at these valuations.
Prices of houses.
The whole currency thing. And you know, you're absolutely right. In hindsight, it will all fit together like a puzzle. But right now, we can't even get the square edges on the frame.
Oh, that's well put. And I think so then you sort of gird your loins for what's going to happen. And it's enough to make you think, okay, what should I do now to protect my assets? What should I do now to preserve the equity in my home? What can I do? And really, there's no great harbor for money if you're trying to save for retirement or invest, except the stock market. You're not going to get it, I guess, real estate if you bought back then. But it makes one wonder what you should be doing now to prepare for some eventuality.
Well, that's the art of balance. I mean, I spent a lot of time with CNBC on in the background. And, of course, those guys are paid or the hedge fund managers get paid and come on and take these positions. Well, this correction or it's going up here or these are the stocks. No, those aren't the stocks. Those are the stocks. And they sound like they're all in on their positions. I think for most ordinary people, the art is balance. You never have a giant score, but you never get wiped out. We know a few things. Number one, we know that over every 20-year period, stocks, general portfolio, S&P 500, with dividends reinvested, over every 20-year period for the last 90 years, going back to 1926, just 95 years now, they've beaten inflation, that diversified portfolio. So we know that there's a possibility of inflation. Got to have some stocks.
Yeah.
You know that desperate money never makes money. There's an old savage truth. It's a market truth. So you don't want to try and double your money in the stock market out of desperation. Chicken money lets you sleep at night, and I don't care if it's paying zero. It's money that won't go away, except because of inflation, so you balance it with stocks. So those are the kinds of decisions that a really good financial planner someone who's not trying to sell you something mm-hmm. will help you sort through. But the biggest mistake is trying to decide where it's going and what's next and getting there. Well, it was Wayne Gretzky, who is famous, very famous. I'm not a hockey fan, but he was so famous for always being ahead of where the puck was going. He got there first. But that's such a rare athletic ability, and I think it's an even more rare market ability.
Terry,
so you're better off just playing the odds.
Dropping a Wayne Gretzky reference here. Very impressive.
Well, that's what he was. I always thought that, you know, that's so unique to get there ahead. There are some people who do that. I don't know how consistently they do that. He was famous for doing that consistently.
Wow. Okay, here we go.
And he wasn't even a Blackhawk, you know.
312. I know that, Terry. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. I was actually talking to a Blackhawk, Bobby Hull, a few days ago.
Oh, really?
He was at an event, and he looked great. And he said, you know what I did, John? And I hadn't asked, but I said, sure, I got time. He said, here's what I did. They didn't think I could go as fast as I did. So when those big defensive men would turn and go after the puck, I would zoom right by him. He was the Golden Jet. He said, I would zoom right by him and I'd get to that puck. We had a great time. That's Bobby Hull. Okay, it's 12:16. Let's pause here. Here's your chance to get in on the conversation. 312-981-7200. Your questions about your unemployment benefits, IDES, someone's going to ask where is their income tax return, whatever else is on your financial mind, 312-981-7200. Terry Savage, the financial columnist at terrysavage.com, joins us on Wednesdays. Got a full boat of phone calls and text messages. Terry, can we jump into that?
Let's do that.
Hey, John, my daughter is going to move to the Naperville area in July or August. Is it better for her to wait until January to purchase a condo or townhome due to the prices, or should she buy now?
That's tough. I don't know what plan B is, because rentals are hard to find, too, especially out in the suburbs, I'm told. Right now, we have low interest rates, but we have this enormous surge in real estate. And, you know, strangely enough, in my long lifetime, the best prices I ever got, the best, you know, trades I ever made were buying real estate in tough times. And this is not going to be considered a tough time for suburban real estate. So I guess it all depends on what her plan B is. Move in with you, parents, and stay there until things ease up a bit. That might be a good idea.
What about this, though, as a strategy? I mean, say the $300,000 house in Naperville now goes for $325. When you amortize that over 30 years with low interest rates, your monthly payment is not going to change that much. So you hate to be buying now, but how much will that really change your out-of-pocket per month?
I don't look at residential real estate as a trade. So if you find the perfect condo and the perfect situation where you're going to be for 5-10 years, go ahead and buy it and pay up a little. That's fine. But if you're a single person who's going to buy a condo and might get married in the next 3 years or might want to move to a
right.
house in the next 3 years,
right.
then you could find yourself looking back and going, oh, I lost $25,000, $30,000 on that transaction. Well, if you don't care because you had a great place to live, that's okay. Real estate is easy to think yourself through because it's not just an investment, it's where you live. So if you go shopping and you see it, and you thought, gee, that should only have been $275,000 last year. Now it's going to be it's listed for $299. I might have to pay $303. And if you could afford it and you can afford the monthly payment, go ahead and do it. Real estate is a separate category in terms of your own house, as far as I'm concerned.
It's an interesting observation. Dennis has a general question for you. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yes. All right. I'm going to turn 65 in November. I'm not ready to retire. I'm thinking 67 is more my target age that I want to retire at. What should I be doing now? I mean, is there anything financially that I should be doing? I mean, I got a 401k. It's pretty decent. I got out of the stock market in it a couple of years ago, though. It's basically just a trust for me and stuff like that, like a savings account. My employer match is very decent and stuff like that. And then I'm looking to try to draw the max on Social Security and stuff like that, but is there anything else I should be doing?
Well, let me just start with this. You should definitely not take Social Security before 67, and if you can wait another year or two, then you should. If you, it depends on the size of your employer, but you probably are going to want to sign up for Medicare, though, at 65. And then, depending on the number of employees your employer has, either Medicare becomes a secondary payee to your employer's plan, or when you sign up for Medicare, you should sign up for the best supplement program. Because while you're healthy and within 6 months of signing up for Medicare, you don't have to do that if you've got good coverage at work. But if you do sign up for Medicare, then you make sure you get your supplement at the same time. I think you need to keep a little bit of the money in the 401k plan, just in like the equity income fund, a very conservative stock fund in there, because all cash isn't paying anything, but you are getting a nice match. So keep contributing. And, hey, congratulations. Oh, and pay down debt. Whatever debt you have, unless it's a long-term mortgage at 3%, make sure you pay off all the debt that you can while you're still working.
Terry, will you say something to him, though, about the fact that if he's... Thanks for the phone call. I hope that helps. If he's 64 and he's going to want money till he's 85, he should be in equities.
Well, that's what I mentioned. You know, the moment you get close to retirement, whether it's going to be 65 or 67, you look at the money in your 401k, and you just put maybe a few $100 every paycheck in, but now it's $382,000 or $511,000. The balances, on average, are very high in 401k plans, and you look and you go, I don't want to lose a penny of that. Okay, I'll be safe. But inflation it can be as bad as a bear market. In 20 years, at only 3% inflation, the spending power of your money is cut in half. Cut in half. So you retire at 65, live to be 85, and you have that nest egg now, which looks like a lot. Just even at 3% inflation, it just eats away at it, which is why, because you got a 20-year time horizon or longer, I hope, you need a small portion, at least maybe 25-30%, in that conservative stock fund. It's going to be called a balance fund or an equity income fund, or the S&P 500 stock index fund.
I'm also going to mention just now, because sometimes you throw out formulas and wisdoms like that, and people are saying, okay, wait, what was that again? We podcast these shows afterwards, right, Pete? So if you want to share this conversation or hear it again, just go to WGNradio.com, click on the Wintrust Business Lunch tab, and you'll be able to catch this a second time as well, because I think some of that is very, very helpful. Joe, you're on.
But you know what?
What?
Let me also say that you can go, there's a link on my website, I make nothing off the book, so go to Amazon and get the latest edition of The Savage Truth on Money, my book. It's only 18 months old, some things like you don't have to withdraw from your IRA till 72, so that's a little bit out of date. But all those principles and all these basics about Social Security and retirement and about giving your kids a start to investing, will you please just go give that to them for college graduation about credit and debt and opening an IRA at age 23 or 4 or 5? Because that's the real secret. Time leverages your money and makes your money work for you. So all the things you wish you had the answers to 25 years ago, and this is not a commercial for my book. It's just that they print it at Amazon. I just want you to make sure young people get started right.
I have less than a minute before we break for the news. We'll come back for a third segment and your calls, 312-981-7200. This texter said, my son and wife just had a new baby. Are they eligible for the new child credit?
Yeah, for 2021, right. As soon as they get a Social Security number, they'll be registered. And based on their income, of course, they would be getting the child credit, tax credit.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. It's Terry Savage, the financial columnist. Hey, John, please ask Terry if it's wise to take out some retirement once you turn 59 and a half to do little things like pay your kids' car off and stuff like that.
Oh, do you think your kids are going to be around when you're 89 and a half and you run out of money?
That's Terry's answer to that question. I'm not surprised to hear that.
It's not just the money you're giving away now. It's all the tax-deferred growth that you will earn between 59 and a half when there's no 10%
penalty. Well, what if you have $6 million in your retirement?
Well, we're talking about a different story here. If you want to go give money to anybody, remember the old TV show, The Millionaire, John Beresford Tipton? I'm already dating myself, where he went around giving checks for $1 million when that was really a ton of money. You can give money to anybody, but you can't give more than $15,000 a year to any one person without filing a gift tax return, which will ultimately be applied when they figure up your total estate at death, and it looks like they're going to get around to raising taxes on estates. So you can give money to your kids. You can give an unlimited amount to your spouse. That's always a good way to get money. But ask me. But the fact is, you don't want to be giving away money that you might need one day. And when you're talking about giving away money for car repairs, that is trading long-term economic growth and stability for rust. That's not a good trade.
Here we go now. Kathy, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. What's your question, Kathy?
Hi, Terry. In 2019, I was working full-time at the end, and I got the correct amount of the stimulus. And then my computer was hacked, and I had to change my bank account. So when my 2020 stimulus came, it was like more than half reduced. And I'm thinking they used my old bank account, and they send me two letters so far saying we need more time. I've tried calling them. Can I go into an office and straighten this out?
No. Well, so you're saying you got the original $1,200 stimulus, but did you get the January $600 stimulus?
I didn't get the $1,400. That's what I'm missing.
Okay, you got
the
$600. You haven't received the $1,400 yet. Did you file a tax return?
Yes.
With
the new bank account number. I'm reduced to tremendously. I'm on Social Security now. So I should have gotten the full $1,400 in my mind.
Did you get any money from the IRS?
$672.
That's interesting. And are you sure that wasn't, did you get the $600 from January?
I did.
You got that separately. And now
and I haven't even gotten that back, my refund back.
Okay, they're working on your return. I have no idea why you got that odd amount. It's not the January $600. It's not an income tax refund that you asked for on this return. It's an odd amount. And the only reason you would get less than the full $1,400 is if your income on a single return was over $75,000. I take it was not over $75,000, your income?
Yeah, right. Hold on a second. Let me bring her back. She is on line one.
Yeah.
What was your income last year, Kathy?
Like under $30,000. I'm on Social Security.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
They're going to fix that. They're going to get around to that, and I promise you I'll help you with that. But you're going to have to wait because they're so far behind. I'm sorry you didn't get the full $1,400, but you deserve it. And at the very worst, I hate to say this to you, you will claim that next year when you file your tax return. You'll claim the difference next year. But I bet, though, if you've gone into the site and they say they're still reviewing it, that could be because of the changed bank account, but I don't know why you would have gotten a partial.
I like the idea, though, of walking into an office where there's somebody.
There's no way. You cannot. Listen, I have to beg and plead. I've been trying to contact someone. I'm working on a story, folks. Let me mention this before we have a half a minute here. It turns out, Sean, and this is my next big column. I'm going to reveal it and see if anybody wants to post it, terrysavage.com. There are a lot of ex-spouses who stole the stimulus checks from their ex. I've had it from men, I've had it from women, and now I'm getting stories of women who are men too, both, who say my ex declared my kids as dependents even though she or he doesn't pay anything, and it wasn't in the divorce decree that he or she would get them on their tax returns, so now they're going to get the $300 a month child tax credit. I've just finished writing an email to my contact at the FBI, working on it with the IRS. I know that is federal tax fraud to steal a stimulus check. And if you want to send an email, I'm not going to answer you, but I'm going to put them in a file. Also give me permission to have the FBI or IRS contact you. Send me the email. My ex stole my check to Terry at terrysavage.com or post on my blog at terrysavage.com. I think I've overturned another rock, John.
Wow.
And a lot of worms are crawling out from underneath it.
That's one way to put it. This is DJ. You're on WGN. DJ, what can we do for you?
Yes, thanks for taking my call, John. Thanks, Terry. My wife and I both have a Roth IRA, and I know the benefits of that is it's tax-free. Does that, when we take the money out, does that mean it's tax-free everything when it comes out, or just the interest that we make?
Everything. You did not get a deduction. First of all, you each have an IRA. You don't both. I mean, you must have your own separate IRA. Okay, you
correct.
And she have separate IRAs. The money was not deductible when you put it in. It was after-tax money. And every penny you take out is tax-free.
How about when I pass away and my beneficiaries, is it tax-free for them? Like, I know probably for my wife it is, but let's say we both pass away and we pass it on to our children.
Yes,
is
but
it tax-free
now that
for them when it comes out?
Yeah, it's tax-free to them when it comes out, but the fact is they cannot. It used to be that you could stretch out that over their lifetimes. Now all the money has to be taken out within 10 years.
All for the beneficiary?
Yes. It all has to be withdrawn. That's a new tax law, just a few months old. So.
Okay. And how long can you know, there's not a limit to, there's not a time when you have to start taking out of a Roth, right?
No, that's the other good thing. You don't have any required withdrawals from a Roth.
Can you keep investing in it? Like, I mean,
As long as you have earned income, not your Social Security, not your dividends, but as long as you have earned income, you can continue to put money away after tax. There's no age limit anymore. When they started out, there were income limits and age limits and so forth.
And there's no amount limit either.
And I should say there's a little caveat. The money has to be in there for 5 years in order for it to come out tax-free, but your money started, you could be withdrawing the money you put in earlier. So there's a 5-year waiting period.
How's that sound?
Oh, it has to be in the account for that long.
Yeah.
Yeah, but since you started contributing years ago, some you can take that money out without any concern.
Some of it can, yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you.
It's the last gift around, and I'm telling you that I hope we both withdraw all our IRA money, or our heirs do, before the IRS goes reaching for that, too. But at the moment, and I think for the foreseeable future, all withdrawals, even by your heirs, are tax-free from your Roth.
Terry, is the trick about IRAs and Roth IRAs, though, should you pay the tax now or should you pay the tax later, and you need to anticipate what your income will be later, so maybe one is more advantageous at one time in your life and another is more advantageous at another time in your life?
Let me make a very quick point because it's a big topic. Right now, many people have rolled over their 401ks into an IRA. They might, because they believe that taxes will be higher down the road, they might want to take some, not all probably, but some of the current IRA and convert this year to a Roth IRA. In order to do that, you must have money, you should have money outside the IRA to pay taxes at your ordinary income tax rates on the money that you convert. So you could convert $100,000 and you're in the 20% bracket. You should have $20,000 sitting in a money market account and use that to pay the taxes. The presumption is you're going to be in a lower tax bracket this year, and all future earnings, now that you've paid the taxes on this, will come out tax-free. Big warning. I know they're going to pass a tax bill this year. I mean, I'm pretty darn sure they will. And I'm pretty sure that they're going to raise tax rates. What we don't know, and maybe it's less likely as we get further into the year, is whether they will make it retroactive to January 1st. The new higher rates. It gets less likely as we move through July. And second of all, if you're going to do that conversion, remember, all the money you convert, the whole $100,000, even though you take $20,000 out of savings to pay the taxes, the whole $100,000 is added on to your income this year. So not only could that push you into a higher tax bracket, but it might impact what you pay for Medicare all next year, because the more money you earn and have an income, Medicare looks and raises your premium. So it's not a simple taxes rates an hour later. If you need a certified financial planner or your tax advisor to help you work through the implications of doing a Roth conversion now.
That's intriguing, too. Remember, we podcast these shows, so write those questions and answers down and visit Terry Savage at terrysavage.com. We'll visit next Wednesday, Terry. Well done, as always.
Thanks, John. I always look forward to it.
We do, too. It's Terry Savage, terrysavage.com. And I just make the point, again, I don't normally spend the time to do this, but I know she has a lot of fast information there. Sometimes it's numbers. Sometimes it's aphorisms that you wish you could recall. If you go to wgnradio.com, Pete will put it up as a podcast. Just click on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's 12:45. Business news continues now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new development is being planned in River North. Vista Property Group will seek city permission for a 21-story residential building on Wells Street, just south of Chicago Avenue. The building will include 178 units. Vista has offices in New York and New Jersey and owns several commercial properties here. The proposed building will also include about 21,000 square feet of retail space and 53 parking spaces. Chicago-based startup Farmer's Fridge will start selling its fresh, pre-made meals and snacks in 18 Jewel Osco locations in Chicago and the suburbs. The company is known for selling items in vending machines. During the pandemic, it turned off most of those fridges and began delivering menu items directly to consumers' homes. This expansion into stores also includes Target stores. Farmer's Fridge is available in 25 Target locations. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Windrus Business Minute.
And now with the story about a former meathead quarterback, it's the Business of Lunch with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, you remember the shots of Jay Cutler moping on the sidelines after, well, probably threw an interception, or the Bears were losing, or whatever the case. Mm-hmm. Well, consider that maybe he wasn't moping. Maybe he was thinking about his next career, which is meat. Cutler has entered the subscription meat business with a company called, clever, Cuts. And maybe hoping to cash in on the way the pandemic changed the way a lot of us are getting our meat these days. Speaking of that, who can forget the empty shelves at the supermarkets a year ago?
I remember coming home, we were talking about it, and I said, you know, that is not the way it is. There's plenty of meat.
Well, that's Annette Rand, who raises beef a couple of hours west of Chicago in Carroll County with her husband, Elmer.
Kind of right between Quad Cities, Dubuque, and Rockford.
We have a feeder cattle operation and a cow-calf operation where we have cows that have calves, and then we also raise corn, soybeans, we raise hay, and wheat.
After seeing those empty meat counters, the Rands saw a need, and they filled it. Connecting with a couple of processors in Carroll County, Elmer and Annette sell their homegrown beef to people across a wide area, from quarter-pound burger patties to quarters to freezer-filling sides of beef.
They can have their size of steaks that they want, the size of their roast, how much hamburger goes in the packages.
Among the few silver linings of the pandemic is the opportunity it has given us to be closer to the sources of our food. And even after the supermarkets were restocked, the Rands are seeing demand for their beef continuing.
That's probably been, you know, the bright side of it is we get the chance to meet people that our product is going toward, and they can put a face, you know, to the food that's going on their table.
And knowing that they know where it comes from, we're all passionate about it as farmers.
You can run the Rands down on Facebook, where Annette has a page, and the spelling of the last name Rand is actually R-A-H-N. There's also a directory of all the farms in Illinois that sell local meat. You can find that at IllinoisBeef.com. Chicago Board of Trade's got a mixed bag today, with corn about 6 cents higher, beans are down about 6 cents, and wheat right now trading down about 4.25 cents. Hogs are lower today, and cattle are about kind of flat right now. Today is National Blueberry Cheesecake Day, which is made from these farm ingredients: cream cheese, sour cream, eggs, sugar, and vanilla in a butter shortbread cookie crust with blueberries, of course.
Wow.
You know, I think I'm going to add that one to my last meal menu. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us now. Let's get rolling. Talk to me a little bit about Amazon. What's the news there, Amy?
Yeah, this is really big news today. In fact, so Amazon has said that they are going to buy MGM Studios. They're going to pay $8.45 billion. When you think about everything that MGM has, they've been around since 1924. That's Rocky, that's Pink Panther, that's the entire James Bond franchise. That is a really, really big move. They also own the Epix cable channel. They are behind TV shows like Fargo and Vikings and Shark Tank. So that's a really big get for Amazon. This is, I think, we're going to keep seeing this kind of these kind of competitive moves. Their big competitors, of course, being Netflix and Disney Plus. And this would all, in theory, encourage Amazon Prime subscribers who want access to that Prime Video. It's also, I thought, was interesting. Immediately, some industry observers kind of started talking a little bit on this news about what this means for other Silicon Valley interest in Hollywood. So we might see more tech companies taking an interest in getting into that streaming space or participating in Hollywood in more interesting ways. But for now, that's a very big purchase for $8.45 billion, but it's also a ton of content, so I'm sure that will be a big get for Amazon.
Every now and then a story like this happens and you say, okay, now what does that mean to my clicker? What am I going to have to subscribe to? Is this going to help me or is this going to hurt me? I don't know that I know the answer to that.
Well, I think especially if you like older movies, you might suddenly see a lot of access to a lot more stuff on Amazon Prime. You know, just like I said, 1924, that was, they've done a whole lot of stuff since 1924. So getting that whole big back catalog. Now, it will be interesting. Prime users know there's the things that are included with Amazon Prime, and then there's still things that even if you're a Prime member, you have to pay a couple of dollars for to rent or buy. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what's that premium top tier and then what's included with Prime membership from MGM.
Give us an update on the travel industry.
Yeah, so a lot of travel leaders were at a conference this week in person in New York, and all of them were surprisingly optimistic. They were at an annual transportation conference. It's hosted by Wolf Research. And Derek Kerr, American's chief financial officer, said that even business travel and long-haul international flights are starting to show some encouraging signs. Most of the three big carriers, that's American, Delta, and United, all kind of said that they were feeling like the domestic travel rebound was coming a little faster than even they expected, and they were trying to be very optimistic. United said it would turn a profit by next quarter, which is way different than what they were saying just a couple of months ago. American said although business trips and those long haul overseas flights were the worst hit during the pandemic, even they were saying we're starting to see some signs of improvement as people are getting vaccinated, as a lot of people are looking to Europe and, you know, to see exactly what will be required for Americans to travel to Europe over the summer. And all of the executives really kind of set a tone that we're going to really rely on domestic leisure travel over the summer, a little bit of international perhaps. But then they all were feeling like they were not too worried by you know, fall and winter. They felt like a lot of business travel would be rebounded. So, you know, again, such a different conversation than we were having just a couple of months ago when some carriers were saying, hey, it could be years. But they all sounded very optimistic at this conference.
We have just 45 seconds left, but I know they're waiting for that business arm to come through, right? That's a big component, especially on international travel. They need the business travelers to get back out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because especially business travelers, they're generally paying a lot more per ticket because they're booking very last minute. So that business travel revenue is such a big piece. I'm sure they're watching that very carefully.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's do it again. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.